Hi, everybody. Welcome back to WFAN's Baseball Insiders for Monday, May 2nd. I'm Sweeney Murdy, joined today by my friend Anthony McCarron. You have seen him on SNY, regular contributor there. Also a freelance writer whose work has appeared numerous places. You might have seen in Baseball Digest. You read him for years in the Daily News as well. Anthony, it's a good time to check in with you because all of a sudden we're headed for Subway Series. And you remember the last one, right? It's May 2nd. Yankees and Mets are in first place. What could possibly go wrong?
I love it, Sweeney. I mean, it would be great. That was my first year on the Yankee beat for the Daily News was the Subway Series. And I was like, wow, is this going to happen every year? And of course, you know, we know what happened afterward. But look, I mean, there's a good reason to be excited about the Mets and the Yankees, right? They have the two best records in baseball. The Yankees have the best record in baseball. You know, they look unstoppable right now, 9 in a row. The Mets have won every series they've played this year. It's a great time to be a baseball fan in New York. You haven't always been able to say that over the past few years. But this looks like it could be really, really entertaining. And I hope that nothing goes wrong and we get what you're talking about. That would be phenomenally interesting.
Let's take them one at a time. I obviously watch the Yankees a lot closer, and they've won every series except one. They split a four-game series with Toronto. They lost a series to Baltimore, which was maddening because they couldn't score, lost an extra innings game in Baltimore. And they've since run off 9 straight and 11 out of 12. But overall, I think the things that we looked at and thought, here are all the problem areas with the Yankees. Well, they're not really problem areas right now. And it might be easier to say that when you look at who they've played over the last 9, but those were still games and series that a year ago, they were not looking this dominant. So they've looked good out of the gate. They've been healthy. They've pitched really well, which frankly, I'm not all that surprised by because they pitched really well last year and all winter and all spring kept hearing people talk about the pitching. I'm like, if you're paying attention, they've been pitching really well, and they had the depth to address all that. It was really about offense and bounce back years. And a couple of the guys that needed bounce back years were DJ LeMahieu and Gleyber Torres. Torres is still a little bit up and down, but DJ LeMahieu is back to being who he was. And I think that's a really big key to what they're doing.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, look, they haven't even, like, Stanton's not really cooking yet. You know, I mean, he's done some things, but he's not really going nuts. He's not having the type of year that he had last year, although he can certainly get there. I think they're really good. I feel like at this point in over their last few years and the way things have gone for them, I have always believed in them, Sweeney, and I've always thought that they would actually do more damage in the playoffs than they have done. So right now while I'm high on them, I'm inclined to say, well, you know, maybe they didn't do enough in the offseason. Maybe there's still some things that will manifest themselves as the season goes on that maybe they should have gone bigger on offense to add. You know, I mean, Josh Donaldson has been fine. He sure walks a lot. I mean, he hasn't been on a huge tear or anything yet. I mean, we're all sort of basking in the glow of Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's resurgence as a hitter, you know, but he's not, like, you can't say that everybody was criticizing them for not getting one of the best shortstops, but look at what he's doing. Well, I mean, he's hitting 300, and that's great, but he's not the same kind of overall threat as those other guys are. And, you know, will those kinds of things come up later? I don't know. I mean, I think, though, as long as Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge and LeMahieu is back and they're getting something from Gleyber that isn't just this sort of overhanging miasma of disappointment that he's not an incredible superstar, I think that's a huge step forward for them. And then you nailed the pitching. They have insane pitching depth in this club, in this organization. And you know, they just sent down a guy, Clark Schmidt, who has the second fewest hits per 9 innings on the staff. And I know it's a small sample size. That's fine. But he's really talented. And this is the kind of the wave of arms, I think, that they've been trying to build and they can throw at you. I think it's going to start to show itself through this season, and that may be the strength. I mean, Luis Severino, we're all really happy about the way he's come back from his injuries, and he looks pretty good, but he's got the worst ERA out of any starter, but it's not awful. Right. And so they're in a great pitching place right now. You know, will they have some offensive troubles later this year? I mean, Joey Gallo's a black hole of strikeouts right now, although I'm not one of those people who say, well, he needs to go. That's ridiculous. He's still a contributor, and he's going to hit home runs at some point this year. You know, save the receipt on that, Sweeney. But it's going to happen. you know, so I like where they are right now. I just don't feel like I can believe in them the way I've believed them in the past few years, and they've been disappointing ultimately.
It's funny you say that. Like, I think, I mean, a lot of what you said is kind of the way I think about them, because we think about them as disappointing, but there are a large segment of people who expect them not to do well. But I think we kind of look at them and see who they are and see who the players are still there. As long as they get there, we're always disappointed when they don't win, or surprised, I should say, when they don't win, because you look at a team that even if they squeak in, if you've got a Gerrit Cole, if you've got, you know, Jonathan Loaisiga and Aroldis Chapman and Aaron Judge and DJ LeMahieu and these guys, like, you're going to expect them to do well. And it's always surprising when they don't. Now, I know there are a large number of fans who see that as the norm because it's been, you know, once in 20 years. And I understand that. But the way the game, I mean, I think you take everything individually. And when you look at getting this group to October and seeing if you see a healthy Cole, if you see a healthy Judge and all that, I mean, you've got to like their chances and still be surprised if they don't break through. And I think a lot of what you're seeing when you, what you described as pitching depth, I just thought of as you were talking about, Clark Schmidt and Michael King have been phenomenal. The team, here's the difference between the Yankees and the other teams. The teams they just played, Kansas City, Cleveland, Baltimore, Schmidt and King are like the 2, 3, 4 starters for those teams. And the Yankees are sending one of them down to AAA and have the other in their stacked bullpen. That's the difference when we're talking about pitching.
Right, absolutely. And I think that there's more in the farm too, Sweeney. I mean, I haven't been following those guys completely, you know, at AAA or anything, but they do have a lot of talent in the system as well, in case inevitably, look, we know that who their pitching staff is now is probably not what it's going to be in 3 months or
completely,
you know, 4 months, whatever it is, because of, you know, attrition and pitchers break and who knows what moves they may look to make down the line, and maybe even use some of that depth to upgrade the major league roster. But I think that that's one of the most impressive things about the Yankees, other than Aaron Judge's overwhelming, incredible talent. To me, you know, the pitching depth really sings for that organization.
All right. I know you watch the Mets a little more closely than I do, and talk about them quite frequently on SNY. Here they are off to the best start in the National League. And Buck Showalter's influence is pretty clear. The talent on this team, the upgrade they made with their offseason moves is pretty clear. Overall, as you look at them, it's hard to see flaws right now because they've played so well. But your bird's eye view after a month of the Mets as they're heading into, you know, pretty decent week. The Braves are not off to the best start, but they're defending champs. They play them this week. They play the Phillies again. So a lot of division games still. A chance to really, you know, either it's a chance for them to put some more distance between them and the other teams in their division right now. You're kind of bird's eye view of the Mets after the first month.
Well, first, a word about the Braves, Sweeney. The Braves are going to be a problem. I know that it doesn't look that way right now, and they may be going through that sort of inevitable thing that a lot of past champions have talked about. Like, it's hard to get going again the next year after all the pomp and circumstance, but they are insanely talented. And, you know, this isn't over. I mean, I know there are so many Met fans who are thinking like, oh, you know, they're so incredible. The Mets are so incredible. And they are really, really, really good, Sweeney. But the Braves are not going to disappear. I would be stunned if that happened. I think injuries would have to take over their entire baseball lives for it to be a bad year for the Braves. They're just that good. You know, so you're right. This is, you know, look, it's May, but the series against the Braves, I like it as a measuring stick. You know, even though these teams are not fully formed yet, and we don't really know who they are, we don't know who the Braves are, but I think that, you know, talent versus talent, and there's going to be a lot of talent on the field at Citi Field in the series, and I think it'll be great fun to watch it. But the Mets are dynamite right now, and they really have upgraded so many places, starting with the manager, who was a huge, he probably should have been hired before the Mets tried to make Carlos Beltran a manager. They probably should have hired buck then. And that's no comment on Carlos's possible ability as a manager. I advocated that he would be a good manager at the time, and he may still be a good manager in the big leagues one day. But I just felt like that they needed the experience, and they're getting that now. They're getting the hyper attention to detail. They're getting the, I mean, Buck Showalter is an extremely smart guy, and I think he is bringing that sort of braininess and a little bit of toughness. And I mean, he played the hit by pitch stuff like a master painter. I mean, it was like charging out of the dugout in anger and talk the way he talks about it. The players know who is behind them right now. And I think that the idea that this manager who's got some hardware, you know, manager of the year awards, he's never won the World Series, but you know, he's a very well respected guy. I think that the players knowing that he's behind them is a big deal for them. And you sort of couple that with Max Scherzer's burning intensity. I love the combination, because Scherzer is, he's one of those guys who I think probably really would do almost anything to win. And I think his high demands for himself are rubbing off on the rest of the team. And under all that, you know, the young core of the Mets has for a few years now established a really nice camaraderie. Like, they get along and they really do play well together. But I think they needed to be maybe, I don't know, molded, or, you know, maybe a kick in the pants, you know, with a little bit of that edge. That's why, I mean, look, it didn't end up happening, but I thought Javi Baez would have been a great re-sign for them, because he brought this kind of, you know, flinty edge to the team, you know, where he had swagger and he was ready to go. You know, you remember that instance on Sunday Night Baseball with the Yankees, he's ready to go. And I think that they could have used that over the years. And I think that Scherzer brings a little bit of that to them. And it's just all sort of bubbling up into this, you know, NL's best record, very entertaining team, tons of talent.
I think, you know, Scherzer's influence on the rest of the pitching staff is probably pretty evident, especially with Jake DeGrom not around. I think if you'd have taken bets on who the next Mets pitcher to throw a no-hitter would be, you'd have a lot of DeGrom, you've had a lot of Scherzer, and clearly those would have been smart choices. But as we saw the other night, none of them were involved. It was kind of fun to think about how it happened, with Tyler McGill starting it, Edwin Diaz closing it. It's a five-man combined no-hitter. And Diaz, as you mentioned, I think you pointed out just how electric he looked in closing it out. It brought back some memories of the combined no-hitter that you and I covered in 2003. It's the only no-hitter I've ever seen in person. And I had a chance to write it. I had so much fun writing about that a few years ago on the 15th anniversary. I got to talk to all six guys. I talked to two guys who were in the bullpen and didn't get into the game. I talked to some of the Yankees guys, and it was a lot of fun. It's actually up on The Athletic. If you want to find it, search on The Athletic, search my name. It's the only thing I've written over there. And that's a fun read. But you had a lot of fun talking to Billy Wagner all about this, and kind of reminiscing and kind of spinning it forward to what this was. They're still fun. And it's in a weird way, the combined no-hitter seemed to be more fun than if DeGrom or Scherzer had pitched a no-hitter.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Sweeney, because I have always looked at them. I mean, they're much more rare in terms of no-hitters than the ones pitched by one pitcher, obviously, because there's 298 recognized no-hitters now that are by one pitcher, and 17 combined no-hitters. And I think a lot of people in baseball sort of shrug when you get to the combined no-hitter, and it's like, oh, it's nice, but it's not. You know, but when I tell you that fans were going crazy about it, they loved it. I mean, it was great. And part of it was because of the Mets. They've only had one other no-hitter, the Johan Santana no-hitter. And, you know, so you sort of think that it's kind of like this, you know, that it's somehow cheaper than a real no-hitter, you know, or somehow, you know, the bargain basement version. But there's still a lot of joy for it. I mean, and look, it's the reliever's only chance to get in on the no-hitter action.
Right.
I mean, they don't get to pitch in a real no, you know, not a real, I should take that back. Sorry, combo guys, I didn't mean it.
Billy's coming after you now.
Yeah, in a solo no-hitter, relievers don't get to pitch. And so now they get their slice of the pie, which is great. And you could see it I was watching the post game show the other night, and they showed some of the interviews. They brought all the Mets pitchers involved and the catcher James McCann, and they were all sitting there at the press conference together, and they were laughing and laughing and having such a great time. And obviously it was, because they just accomplished this thing and they won a game, everybody's in a good mood, yada yada. But they you could tell that this was sort of meaningful, even in kind of a quirky way. And that's cool. I mean, baseball lends itself to all that sort of stuff. And, we kind of revel in it. And so that was a nice thing. Billy Wagner, he says it's a great feat. And he says, look, it's like it's hard in its own way because, you bring five p different pitchers into a game, they all have to be good. They all have to do the job, and not just do the job that relievers do, which is to get through innings unscathed, not give up runs, blah blah blah. They have to give up no hits, and that's very difficult, even in today's hyper strikeout age, where everybody's trying to hit the ball over the fence and they're shifting all over the place. I mean, it's still hard. When they brought it, I'm glad you brought up Edwin Diaz. He is one of my favorite Mets to watch, and I think he's insanely good. And I think there's a brand of Met fan out there that thinks because he gave up a few games, and whoa, closers give up games, newsflash, but gave up a few games a couple of years ago, that he's this worthless guy. Well, just watch that inning against the Phillies where he destroyed their three best hitters. Oh, by the way, they looked so unhappy at the plate. I mean, the strikeout, I think it was Realmuto to end the game, but that strikeout was, I'm not calling him non-competitive, but the swings were so defensive and like, oh, he just like, and Edwin Diaz has an incredible fastball slider combo. He threw 10 sliders in that inning out of 13 pitches, and he was unhittable, and it was great to watch. And good for him for finishing that thing off. He'll always have that as a Met, no matter what happens, and so will all those guys, and it's kind of cool.
I think one of the things that it speaks to is, the Mets set an unofficial record because pitch count data only goes back so far. But pitch count data had shown you that the Astros combined no-hitter was the one with the most pitches thrown until last Friday. The Astros pitchers in 2003 against the Yankees threw 151 pitches. The Mets pitchers threw 159. To your point, that's 159 chances for Phillies batters to get a hit, and they did not. It is so much, it's almost more impressive than watching, David Cone wiped out the Expos in 88 pitches, right? Back in 1999. It's different because you're giving them so many more chances. And Billy Wagner made that point to me, and I'm sure that's part of the reason that he holds that in such high regard. They had all these chances to get a hit and still did not. I guess six is the most. Could you have seven pitchers throw a no-hitter? It's leads us into this next topic that you threw out on Twitter, and I found kind of interesting because I thought people were really into it. As you or I were discussing before we started recording, social media doesn't always lend itself to productive arguments. This one actually seemed productive. Unbreakable records. And they fell into a couple of different categories, and you kind of had some fun throwing that out there and dealing with some of those guys.
It was great, Sweeney. It was a really nice way to spend some time while I was watching a ball game and thinking about these things. It happened when SNY showed some footage of or it came into my head when SNY showed footage of Johnny Vandermeer. And of course, he is the only man to throw consecutive no-hitters. So this was the day after the Met no-hitter. Seeing that, I thought, well, is that the most unbreakable record in baseball? Like, who could throw three no-hitters in a row? I mean, it's nuts. I know they set a, I know baseball set a record with nine no-hitters last season, but I mean, to think of one guy, first of all, would throw three straight complete games and would throw three consecutive no-hitters. I mean, who are the guys who have thrown at least three no-hitters? Right? Verlander, Bob Feller, Sandy Koufax, and Nolan Ryan. Is that it? Have I missed
I
anybody
think
with?
that's most of them, yeah.
I mean, my goodness, so we're talking about the very best pitchers of all time having to do it three times in a row.
Right.
So that kind of kicked it off. And then a lot of people were responding, and there were some phenomenal responses with some great ideas and thoughts. Peter Boddy, my old colleague at the Daily News, brought up was one of many to bring up Fernando Tatis Sr.'s two grand slams in one inning because, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think you would have to have, you'd have to bring 22 hitters to the plate to get a chance at the third one.
Yeah.
And, you know, you would have had to hit two before and have that happen. And, you know, so that's a crazy, crazy one. And then, of course, you know, people were bringing up Cal Ripken's streak, Cy Young's, not just wins, 511, but his losses, which I think is 373, and his complete games, which is, you know, north of 700. So, I mean, those are all unfathomable. You know, our pal Dom Amore, who we were on the Yankee beat with for years, Sweeney, said he brought up an interesting way to look at Cy Young's records and maybe Jack Chesbrough's single season wins, which I think was 41 in 1904, something like that. And he said those records are obsolete. And, you know, because of the way the game is played, that's a fair point.
Yep.
You know, here's another one that's obsolete. And I want to give this guy credit because I would never have thought of this. Paul Iaconis brought up, he said, there's no debate. 512 sacrifices by Eddie Collins.
Right.
The all time.
Yep.
And it's a great point because I looked up who the active leader was and it's Clayton Kershaw with like 100 and something. So, you know, Clayton Kershaw is not getting, you know, 500 more or 400 more sack attempts. But here's the thing too. The game has changed so much, obviously, we know since Eddie Collins' day, but he had a career batting average, Sweeney. I'm looking this up. 333, and he had a 424 career on base percentage. So in today's game, with all of the charts and analytics and everything we know about how you know how to win baseball games and provide offense, you're never having the guy who gets on 42% of the time give himself up. Never, ever.
Nope.
So, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe that record also falls under Dom's obsolete category.
Sure.
You know, you brought up what Dale Long's eight consecutive home runs in eight consecutive games, which has been tied but never surpassed. And there were just a bunch of others that make you think about baseball in a great way. Ricky's steal records. You know, who's going to get to eight career no hitters?
Yeah,
Nolan Ryan might be safe, right? Who's getting there? Come on, I mean, Verlander has three, right? And he's unbelievable. So, you know, this is a favorite one too of a lot of people. And I'd like to hear what you have to say about this one, because obviously he's an icon of a franchise that we've covered for a long time. But Joe DiMaggio's 56 game hitting streak. Do you think somebody could make that happen in today's media climate? The way games are pitched, the arms that are throwing, having to face instead of a tired starter being 0-for-3 in the eighth inning when you come up and you're facing, you know, I don't even know, Mel Harder, who's exhausted, just trying to get through the game, as opposed to some kid they just called up for the minors who hit 102 on the gun last week and his, you know, his slider is, you know, hissing at you as it goes by.
It's a great point because it does feel impossibly hard. For the reasons that you're talking about. And if you look up, I did this last year. I don't have the exact numbers memorized, but just the idea of how many times guys like Mantle and DiMaggio faced a pitcher 3 and 4 times in a game versus how many times Aaron Judge, for example, has faced a pitcher 3 and 4 times in a game. I think when I looked it up, it was like Mantle had faced a pitcher 4 times, like say about 1,100 times in his career, and Judge had done it 11 times in his career. And you could see for those guys how their numbers increased as they're facing a tiring pitcher and they're getting more and more looks at him. You know, clearly they built upon their numbers that way. And so to your point about DiMaggio and his hitting streak, I looked this up and I pulled it off of my shelf to look it up specifically. Kostya Kennedy wrote a book about Joe DiMaggio's streak a few years ago. And in the 56 games, he faced a total of 55 different pitchers. If you had to do that today, what would the number be? Like 110 different pitchers?
Yeah, right.
Over the course of that time? Because you're, you know, and the kind of guy that could do it to the media attention you're talking about, and only because, again, I looked up something about him recently. A couple of years ago, DJ LeMahieu hit consecutively in 50 out of 56 games. And he had different streaks of 11, 14, and 9. So it wasn't like there was the intense pressure, but he's also the kind of guy who's so minimal in his answers and interviews that maybe he is unaffected by it. And as many eyes are popping on this, you are probably looking at this as a way of saying, okay, maybe he's so unaffected by this that it's possible. Although it's probably impossible.
The pressure would be enormous. I mean, I should say the attention would be enormous. I mean, the pressure would be up to the player to sort of manage it each to his own and feel it in their own way and the way they cope with pressure. But the attention would be, it would be insane.
I think, to yours and Dom's point about the career records are obsolete because the game is played differently and the length of careers really affects how those are played. But, I mentioned the Dale Long streak because we've seen every home run record obliterated in our lifetime multiple times. And this is one that's only been tied twice. He homered in 8 consecutive games in 1956, Mattingly tied it. It leads us into this next topic that you threw out on Twitter. And I found kind of interesting because I thought people were really into it. As you were discussing before we started recording, social media doesn't always lend itself to productive arguments. This one actually seemed productive. Unbreakable records. And they fell into a couple of different categories. And you kind of had some fun throwing that out there and dealing with some of those guys.
It was great, Sweeney. It was a really nice way to spend some time while I was watching a ball game. And, thinking about these things, it happened when SNY showed some footage of, or it came into my head when SNY showed footage of Johnny Vandermeer. Yeah. And of course, he is the only man to throw consecutive no hitters. So this was the day after the Met no hitter. And, seeing that, I thought, well, is that the most unbreakable record in baseball? Like, who could throw 3 no hitters in a row? I mean, it's nuts. I know they set, I know baseball set a record with 9 no hitters last season, but I mean, to think of one guy, first of all, would throw 3 straight complete games and would throw 3 consecutive no hitters. I mean, who are the guys who have thrown at least 3 no hitters, right? Verlander, Bob Feller, Sandy Koufax, and Nolan Ryan. Is that it? Have I missed anybody?
I think that's most of them. Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, so we're talking about, the very best pitchers of all time having to do it 3 times in a row.
Right.
So that kind of kicked it off. And then a lot of people were responding and there were some phenomenal responses with some great ideas and thoughts. Peter Boddy, my old colleague at the Daily News, brought up, was one of many to bring up Fernando Tatis Sr.'s 2 grand slams in 1 inning because, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think you would have to have, you'd have to bring 22 hitters to the plate to get a chance at the third one.
Yeah.
And, you would have had to hit 2 before and have that happen. And, so that's a crazy, crazy one. And then, of course, people were bringing up Cal Ripken's streak, Cy Young's, not just wins, 511, but his losses, which I think is 373, and his complete games, which is, north of 700. So, I mean, those are all unfathomable. Our pal Dom Amore, who we were on the Yankee beat with for years, Sweeney, said he brought up an interesting way to look at Cy Young's records and maybe Jack Chesbrough's single season wins, which I think was 41 in 1904, something like that. And he said those records are obsolete. And, because of the way the game is played, that's a fair point.
Yep.
Here's another one that's obsolete. And I want to give this guy credit because I would never have thought of this. Paul Iaconis brought up, he said, there's no debate. 512 sacrifices by Eddie Collins.
He's
the all-time.
Yep.
And it's a great point because I looked up who the active leader was and it's Clayton Kershaw with like 100 and something. So, Clayton Kershaw is not getting, 500 more or 400 more sack attempts. But here's the thing too. The game has changed so much, obviously, we know since Eddie Collins' day. But he had a career batting average, Sweeney. I'm looking this up. 333, and he had a 424 career on base percentage. So in today's game, with all of the charts and analytics and everything we know about how to win baseball games and provide offense, you're never having the guy who gets on 42% of the time give himself up. Never, ever.
Nope.
So maybe that's it. Maybe that record also falls under Dom's obsolete category.
Sure.
You brought up Dale Long's 8 consecutive home runs in 8 consecutive games. which has been tied but never surpassed. And there were just a bunch of others that make you think about baseball in a great way. Rickey's steal records. You know, who's going to throw? Who's going to get to 8 career no hitters?
Yeah,
Nolan Ryan might be safe, right? Who's getting there? Come on, I mean, Verlander has 3, right? And he's unbelievable. So, you know, this is a favorite one too of a lot of people. And I'd like to hear what you have to say about this one, because obviously he's an icon of a franchise that we've covered for a long time. But Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak. Do you think somebody could make that happen in today's media climate, the way games are pitched, the arms that are throwing, having to face, instead of a tired starter, being 0-for-3 in the 8th inning when you come up and you're facing, I don't even know, Mel Harder, who's exhausted, just trying to get through the game, as opposed to some kid they just called up for the minors who hit 102 on the gun last week and his slider is, hissing at you as it goes by.
It's a great point because it does feel impossibly hard for the reasons that you're talking about. And if you look up, I did this last year, and I don't have the exact numbers memorized, but just the idea of how many times guys like Mantle and DiMaggio faced a pitcher 3 and 4 times in a game versus how many times Aaron Judge, for example, has faced a pitcher 3 and 4 times in a game. I think when I looked it up, it was like Mantle had faced a pitcher 4 times, like say about 1,100 times in his career, and Judge had done it 11 times in his career. And you could see for those guys how their numbers increased as they're facing a tiring pitcher and they're getting more and more looks at him. You know, clearly they built upon their numbers that way. And so to your point about DiMaggio and his hitting streak, I looked this up and I pulled it off of my shelf to look it up specifically. Kostya Kennedy wrote a book about Joe DiMaggio's streak a few years ago. And in the 56 games, he faced a total of 55 different pitchers. If you had to do that today, what would the number be? Like 110 different pitchers?
Yeah, right.
Over the course of that time? Because and the kind of guy that could do it, to the media attention you're talking about, and only because, again, I looked up something about him recently. A couple of years ago, DJ LeMahieu hit consecutively in 50 out of 56 games. And he had different streaks of 11, 14, and 9. So it wasn't like there was the intense pressure, but he's also the kind of guy who's so minimal in his answers and interviews that maybe he is unaffected by it. And as many eyes are popping on this, you are probably looking at this as a way of saying, okay, maybe he's so unaffected by this that it's possible. Although it's probably impossible.
The pressure would be enormous. I mean, I should say the attention would be enormous. I mean, the pressure would be up to the player to sort of manage it each to his own and feel it in their own way and the way they cope with pressure. But the attention would be, it would be insane.
I think, to yours and Dom's point about the career records are obsolete because the game is played differently and the length of careers really affects how those are played. But, I mentioned the Dale Long streak because we've seen every home run record obliterated in our lifetime multiple times. And this is one that's only been tied twice. He homered in 8 consecutive games in 1956, Mattingly tied it in 87, Griffey tied it in 93, and a couple of guys have come close. And I've talked to Mattingly about this and just this idea. It's a really big hot streak. It's a hot streak with home runs.
Right.
So, like, these are the shorter, smaller things that should be easier to attain and break than, trying to play in 2,600 consecutive games or something like that. But we haven't seen it yet. And with all the, with the power that we're talking about and the home runs coming at the rate that they're coming until very recently because of
the ballparks.
It's amazing that it hasn't been broken. It would have to be 9 consecutive games. The other one that just popped into my head this morning as we're getting ready for this, 4 home runs in a game has been equaled many, many times. Nobody's hit 5.
Right.
You'd think that would be another one, but these are short term. These are short hot streaks that you would think at some point someone would get. And those records have stood longer than some of these career marks that we saw broken in our lifetime.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point, Sweeney. And it's interesting to think about it. And I do think all those factors, and the ballparks are obviously built to let balls go out, because now every time somebody hits a home run in baseball, we're getting like that, we're getting the reading, that would be a home run in 13 of the 30 parks. And that's fine. I mean, they're obviously designed to get balls out of the park. Fans love home runs, and they're awesome. But you're right. You would think that would help somebody, get rolling and get 9 games in a row by hitting the ball over the fence. And it hasn't happened. And look, I mean, this is one of those things that you can file so much under this heading of why we love baseball, you can't actually figure it out. Because you should be able to. You're right, this record should have fallen a while ago, but it hasn't, and you put it under the old, that's why we love baseball, because it won't let this record happen for right now, and then maybe there'll be a bend in the space-time continuum and something will happen, and Judge or Stanton will hit 10 home runs in 10 straight games. I do want to throw in one thing about the career records. Yeah. I'm interested in this. I thought about this morning too. There's a lot of talk about change in the game right now, right? And doing things and putting limits on this and that. What if Cy Young's records became legit again, or not legit, but they became into play again because MLB decides, you know what? This is enough with the wave of pitchers. 10 pitcher limit mm-hmm. on their pitching mm-hmm. staff. What if something like, I mean, we can't foresee that right this second because of the way the game is pitched, but what if that happens, in 20 years when there's, the regimes are different and people are looking at baseball differently? What if they say, enough is enough? The starting pitchers are, and I think I'm stealing this from maybe Tyler Kepner, the Times, but they're like the star quarterbacks of baseball. Like, they need to be in there more. And, but the star quarterbacks don't come out, in the seventh game of the equivalent of the seventh game of the World Series in football. So maybe if they sort of legislate the game where starting pitching is a thing again, and you just have to deal with it, because look, pitch counts and all the stuff that they're doing now, limiting starters, like, it's not like starters and pitchers don't get hurt anymore because of them. So what if they flop back to that? And then what if somebody, some Cy Young of the, the 2050s comes along and pitches until, whatever age, and throws a bunch of complete games somehow. I mean, who knows? That's down the line. That's like baseball science fiction I'm talking, but go ahead.
I'm saying it would probably help us see another 300 game winner in the future, but probably not. The 5-11 is still something that figures really hard to do, because you're talking about trying to win 30 and 40. I think you're right. I think something like that would help us envision the star pitchers being able to do what they're supposed to do. And instead of guessing which of the 8 relievers or 9 relievers that you're carrying are going to finish out the biggest moments of the big games. I'm going to have you on again with this as I kind of rotate through. And I want to make sure
get into 60 doubles, Sweeney.
60. Yeah. Nobody hits doubles because the ballparks are smaller because they go out of the park now. Right. And the triples, if people talk about doubles and triples, well, you could still get that if the ballparks were bigger, but they're not, which also hurts batting average because there's less grass on the field which hurts the hitting streaks. It's all intertwined here. The ballparks are designed differently and it affects all these things. Let's do this again, because I enjoy this, and I'll give you about, let's say, another month to come up with another quirky topic.
Okay.
We'll figure it out again. Follow Anthony McCarron on Twitter at Anthony McCarron. You can see him on SNY. You can read him on SNY's website and also numerous places, including Baseball Digest, still occasionally in the Daily News, where he longtime did wonderful work there and helped me figure out how and where to eat in this country. It is a gift that I am not ungrateful for, Anthony. Thank you. We're going to follow the Yankees and Mets all year too, obviously, and talk about more things. This is WFAN's Baseball Insiders. Make sure to subscribe and review and all that jazz. Until next time, for Anthony McCarron, I'm Sweeney Murdy. Thanks for listening.